Summer is finally here. Today, you're going to learn to talk about holidays and travel. There's lots of holiday vocabulary and useful expressions in this episode of...
Aprender Inglés con Resi Craig.
Welcome, I'm Craig.
And I'm Reza.
And with over 45 years of teaching between Reza and I, we'll help you improve your English and take it to the next level. How are you, Reza?
I'm very well, Craig. I'm enjoying the very pleasant weather here in Valencia. What about you?
Gorgeous, isn't it? A lovely warm day. We've been very lucky here in Valencia lately with the weather. Summer is finally here, and that is the subject of today's podcast. But before that, we have a message from Cristian Avila from Mexico City. Let's listen to Cristian's message.
Hello, Reza and Craig. I am Cristian from Mexico City. I want to talk about your podcast is very nice. I like it much. I listen every day. And I want to say thank you for that such wonderful work that you have been done all this time. I enjoy a lot of your work. Thank you very much. Cristian Avila from Mexico City.
Thank you, Cristian, for sending in your voice message. Lovely, lovely to hear from you. What did you think, Reza, of Cristian's message?
That was very clear and fluent and well done. I'm very impressed, Cristian.
Did you hear anything that Cristian could improve from his speaking?
Maybe one or two things. What did you notice?
Well, there was one thing I noticed. He said, "I like too much," which in Spanish you translate from "me gusta demasiado," but it's better in English to say "I like it very much." So put the adverbial expression, Cristian, at the end. Okay, after the object. I like it very much. I like football very much. I like your podcast very much. Or you can use a lot. So I like it a lot. I like the podcast a lot.
And if you say too much, too means it's excessive, so that's a bad thing. But very is a good thing, very much.
Yeah.
Did you pick up on anything else, Craig?
Well, I think Cristian said a wonderful work that you have been done. Did you hear that?
I couldn't quite make it out, but yes, I thought he may have said that.
So okay. if you did, it's better to say have been doing. So the wonderful work or the wonderful podcast that you have been doing all this time, that you have been doing all this time. Thanks for your message, Cristian. It was really good to hear from you.
Craig, is there any news on the history quiz that we did in episode 153?
Yes, the first person to reply with all of the correct answers was the person who asked us to do the episode, Francisco Espinola from Úbeda. He suggested the podcast topic of episode 153. He's obviously a history buff. A history buff, B-U-F-F, a buff is a person who really likes something, who's really keen on something. So if you are a snooker buff, for example, you really, really like snooker. And we think that Francisco is a history buff. He's really into history. And he suggested the episode 153. If you want to listen to that episode, if you are a history buff, go to inglespodcast.com/153. He sent us an email. Would you like to read it, Reza, along with the answers to our questions that we posed?
So here comes his email. He writes, "Hi guys, thank you very much for having my suggestion taken into account. I'm delighted answering the quiz," and then he writes the question and the answer to the quiz. So question number one, name the UK's first ever female prime minister. And the answer was, Craig?
Margaret Thatcher. Well done.
Number two, which British monarch ruled the longest period of time?
And correctly, Francisco puts Elizabeth II, the current queen, our queen at the moment, Elizabeth II, has reigned the longest period of time.
The third question was, which British king was given the nickname of the Mad King?
And that was King George III of Great Britain, who ruled from 1738 to 1820.
Question four was, who were the Roundheads and Cavaliers?
And the answer, during the Civil War in England, the Roundheads were the parliamentarians, the people who were pro-government, and the Cavaliers were the royalists, the people who supported the crown.
Question five. When was the Battle of Hastings?
And again, Francisco got this correct. 14th of October, 1066.
And the last question, and apologies to Spanish listeners, which famous British sailor defeated the Spanish Armada?
And that was Francis Drake. And we have to speak about our victories because we've been doing really bad in the football recently. So
he goes on, Francisco goes on in his email to say, well, I could answer questions 1, 2, 5, and 6 by heart. By heart means from memory. And 3 and 4 by Wikipedia. So he definitely is a history buff. And he writes, if there are more AIRC-oholics.
Aircoholics.
Aircoholics. If there are any more aircoholics interested in history, I recommend the Terry Deary's collection, Horrible Histories. And it's a box of books. I suppose he means a box set.
Yeah, a box set. A box set.
20 books of British history from the Stone Age to the Second World War, written in a funny and amusing way.
I've got to say, Rezo, I like the term aircoholics. AIRC, which is Aprender Inglés con Rezi Craig, that we use in every title when we number the episode. And Francisco has made it into a new word, aircoholics, because we often speak about Luke's English podcast. And the name of his podcast is Luke's English Podcast, LEP. And people who follow him are called lepers. Because it's LEP.
Lepers,
so maybe we could start to call the people who follow us and listen to our podcast Aircoholics. Why not?
They're hooked on us. Craig, that makes us
I like that. I really like that. Thank you, Francisco.
Yeah. That makes us like kind of sound like we're drug traffickers or something and we're getting you all hooked. But I tell you what, we're the poorest drug traffickers you ever met in the world because, as you know, our episodes are free. So if only all drugs were free. Francisco ends with a nice piece of advice for me. He helped me out. He said, by the way, Reza, the word you were struggling to say, and I really was struggling. I find it very difficult. Here we go. Was mujeriego. Did I get it right this time, Francisco? I think so.
It mujeriego. Sounded good to me. I'm going to try it. Mujeriego. Is that okay?
Oh, perfect.
Mujeriego?
Perfect.
Womanizer.
Womanizer. Thank you again. A big hug. And a big hug to you too, Francisco. Thanks very much.
I also want to say hi to Raquel González Herrero from Valencia, who also sent us the correct answer, except for question two, Reza. What did she have for question two?
Yes. Hi, Raquel. How are you? Good, except number two, you wrote Queen Victoria was the longest reigning monarch. Well, she was, that's true. But Queen Elizabeth II became the longest reigning monarch in 2015. She overtook Queen Victoria. Although I remember in your email, Raquel, you pointed out that because my question was, who was the longest reigning monarch? You thought, but it's got to be someone in the past. Not necessarily. From 2015 onwards, Elizabeth became the longest reigning monarch. Okay, she's still on the throne. She's still a monarch. It's true, but you can't say she was the longest reigning monarch. I deliberately didn't use the present perfect. I didn't say who has been because I thought that might have been a big clue. una pista, and I didn't want you to get the answer too easily.
So you were being a bit sneaky there, Reza, a bit tricky.
Was I apologize, Raquel.
Before we leave this subject of history, I want to add something to Francisco's recommendation for the books, Horrible Histories. Because you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously a podcast listener. And if you happen to be into history, if you are a history buff, I strongly recommend a podcast called Hardcore History. It's by someone called Dan Carlin, C-A-R-L-I-N. And I don't like history, but I am addicted to his podcasts. He really does bring life into history. His podcasts take months to produce. They're extremely, extremely good quality and extremely interesting. So if you like history, I promise you won't be disappointed. We're not being paid for this recommendation. I just really love his podcasts. And there's a link to his webpage in the show notes to this episode at inglespodcast.com/156. What do we have next, Reza?
Craig, we have some more feedback. We've got a voice message from Bolivia, from Elsie.
Yes, Elsie got in touch just to say hello. So we always play voice messages that you send us. Let's hear Elsie's voice message all the way from Bolivia.
Hello, Clay. I'm Elsie from Bolivia. I'm 4 years old. I have one child who is 13 years old. I have studied in the Utepsa University. I finished the university the last year in November. In this moment, I'm trying to improve my English with practice my listening, so my speaking and listening, and I also like to improve every day. Thank you.
Hey, Elsie, thank you so much for sending us your voice message. It was quite difficult to understand because of the quality of the recording, but thank you for sending it to us. We understand that you have one child who is 13 years old, I think. Did you hear?
I think so, but it was hard to really hear what you said because of the quality.
And we weren't sure whether you studied at university. I think it must be that you've studied at university. We understood that. Yeah. And that you're trying to improve your English, your speaking and your listening, which is great. And we're really pleased you're listening to us. And hello to you in Bolivia.
By the way, your voice was really good. Your pronunciation, your intonation was good. When we say we found it difficult to understand, it was just the quality of the recording.
Yeah.
But from what I could hear, your pronunciation, Elsie, is very good, actually.
Yeah, yeah. The English was very good, but it was just the sound quality that wasn't good enough to understand every word. We have two iTunes reviews, and we'd like to say thank you for people who have been giving reviews and stars to us on iTunes. Two five-star reviews, one from Arnaud Grillo from Spain, who says, extremadamente dictat. Well, you better read it. Could you read it, Reza?
this is like a repetition of my Mujeriego.
Exactly.
Extremadamente didáctico, temáticamente variado y muy, muy entretenido. El mejor en su especie.
That was very nice.
Well, thanks very much. You're saying the best of the bunch. El mejor en su especie. The best of the bunch. Thanks very much.
So is especie then species?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And in English, you'd say the best of the bunch.
Best of the, yeah, that would be a nice colloquial expression.
That's very nice. Also from Aldropa from Spain, who says, I can read this, it's in English. Thank you. This is the best podcast I've ever found. Good work. It's very helpful. I found you 3 weeks ago and now I'm addicted. He's an heir. Was it aeroholic?
Yeah, you're another alcoholic.
Alcoholic.
You're an alcoholic. You've become addicted. God, we better watch out, Craig. The vice department of the police will be looking for us.
The English police, the grammar police will be coming for us because of our alcoholics.
Yeah.
Next, we have a voice message from Paco from Badajoz, or as Reza says,
Badajoz,
with an idea for a topic, holidays and travel. Here's Paco.
Hello, Reza. Hello, Craig. I'm Paco. I'm from Badajoz, or Badajoz, as we say here. First, I would like to congratulate you for your excellent job. These podcasts are very interesting, fantastic. I usually listen to them when I have to commute every day to my work. I would like to suggest an issue to talk about. In a few months' time, we are going to have our holidays, so I think it will be useful to talk about airports, traveling, hotels, that kind of things, you know. So, as I say, thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you, Paco.
Thanks very much, Paco. And you see, even Paco said that you can say Badajoz. I'm not just making it up. You've heard a real Pacense, that's someone from Badajoz, saying Badajoz.
I heard no mistakes in Paco's message. I thought it was absolutely perfect. What did you think?
Yep, very good pronunciation, nice intonation, no grammar mistakes, no vocabulary mistakes, as far as I could hear.
Well done, Paco. And Paco's right, isn't he? The weather's getting better. It's nearly time to be thinking about our summer holidays. So let's look at some vocabulary connected to holidays and travel. Now, we did speak about air travel vocabulary back in episode 108. So if you want to go back and listen to that, go to inglespodcast.com/108. Let's do a bit of revision, Reza. What do you think? Go back and look at some of the words we discussed in that episode.
Yes, we'll do that first and then we'll add some more.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go on a trip, to go on a trip, or you can go away or get away, or you can take a break for a few days.
A common mistake with Spanish speakers is they say to go on a travel, don't they? Or they take a travel. And that's wrong because travel is usually used as a verb. I like traveling. I like to travel. So if you want a noun, use trip, to go on a trip or to take a trip.
Although travel does exist as a noun, but it's uncountable. So you can never say a plus travel.
Mm-hmm.
But you can say I like travel as a noun. That would be okay. But a plus travel, no. It's not singular or plural. It's uncountable.
I said that to one of my students once, and he came back to me the following lesson and said, what about Gulliver's Travels?
Wow, yeah, you got me there.
he got me as well.
I never thought of that.
Gulliver's Travels, Los Viajes de Gulliver.
That's Gulliver's true. Travels.
But it's very unusual, isn't it?
Yes, and of course it's a very well-known book. It's one of my favourite books of all time, actually, I have to say. Gulliver's Travels. You foxed me there. I'm going to put it down to a fixed expression. I think I can explain it. It's when you say a person's name, you can have it plural. Gulliver's Travels, Craig's Travels around the world, the group's travels. But you can't just say travels are good for you. No, doesn't work.
Nope,
it's got to be the person. So Gulliver's, John's, Craig's, the podcaster's travels.
It's definitely a mistake that many Spanish speakers make. So try to remember to use trip. It's much more common, especially in spoken English, to go on a trip. Now, if you go by a plane, you have to pay money. Reza, what do you call the amount of money you pay to travel on a bus, a train, a taxi or an aeroplane?
It's the fare, F-A-R-E. So on a plane, that would be the airfare,
mm-hmm.
because you're flying by air. But on a bus, the bus fare, a train fare, a taxi fare, a tram fare, etc.
And when you arrive at the airport, or sometimes before you leave, these days many people do this on computer or on their phone, you have to check in. You have to confirm that you're going on the flight. Flight is the noun of the verb to fly. Another common mistake, people use fly as a noun. It's a verb. So the noun is flight, F-L-I-G-H-T. You check in for your flight. You could have a domestic flight if it's inside your country, or if you're going abroad, it's an international flight. It could be a short flight of 45 minutes or a really long-haul flight. Long-haul, H-A-U-L, means long distance, crossing the Atlantic, flying to Australia. They are long-haul flights.
And Craig, often when you check in, they ask you what type of seat you want. What can you choose? What's the choice of seats?
You could sit next to the aisle, A-I-S-L-E. Be careful of the pronunciation. The S is silent. The pronunciation is exactly the same as the contraction of I will, aisle. So the aisle seat is next to the pasillo, and the window seat is obviously next to the window. The verb to fly is irregular. What's the past of fly?
Fly, flew, flown are the parts.
Fly, flew, flown. I flew yesterday. I have flown this week.
Craig, what's a red-eye flight?
Red-eye flight is when you wake up really early in the morning or you fly through the night and your eyes are red because of lack of sleep. Have you ever had one of those that you don't get enough sleep, you don't sleep on the plane, you arrive somewhere really early and you're so tired, you're exhausted, you haven't slept enough, your eyes are red and stinging. Get the pican. So that's a red-eye flight.
What's a boarding pass, Craig?
That's the piece of paper you print from your computer or the card you get when you check in at the airport that is the pass that lets you onto the plane or on board, B-O-A-R-D, on board, a bordo. So it's the tarjeta de embarque, boarding pass.
Of course, Craig, you can fly with a different degree of comfort. How do we classify that in English?
Well, the way I usually fly is economy, the cheapest option, economy class. Of course, you can fly business class, which is probably double or is it three times more expensive? I don't know. Business class. And of course, if you really are rich, first class.
Have you ever flown first class?
I have never flown first class, but I have flown business class because I got an upgrade, which in Spanish is subir de categoría. So they were double booked and they didn't drag me off the plane. They left me on the plane. They offered me an upgrade to business class, which was wonderful. But the stewardess or the cabin crew, the people who serve you drinks, they actually checked my ticket three times because of my jeans and my old T-shirt. They didn't believe that I had a business class ticket. So they checked my ticket two or three times during the flight.
They probably thought, a podcaster, a business class? We've never had a podcaster before.
It was a long time before I started podcasting. I was very young. I was probably 21, 22 years old. Very young and very poor.
I once had to buy a business class seat against my wishes because I wanted to get home for Christmas and I left it too late to book, to reserve a ticket. And there was nothing left except a business
I remember that. That was a couple of years ago.
No, it was quite a while ago. It was a long time ago. Okay. A long time ago. And so I had to buy this business class seat against my wishes. Anyway, when I got on the plane, I discovered that the only real difference was that you sat at the front and the seats were a bit cleaner. They weren't even bigger. But you got a breakfast and you could repeat the breakfast. I ate about a dozen croissants because I thought I paid for them. I'm going to bloody well eat them. And they said, another croissant? Yeah, another one. And after about five, they stopped asking me. They just brought it automatically.
They gave you the whole box.
I just basically ate croissants the whole flight. I thought, I'm getting my money's worth here for paying business class.
When you arrive and you've checked in, then when your flight is about to take off or an hour before or half an hour before, then you go to the puerta de embarque. How do you say that in English?
The gate.
The gate.
Or boarding gate, you could add, if you like.
So you can see the gate number on the display screen and you go to your gate. Gate actually means verja, oreja, or barrera. Usually it's something you find in a field or a garden gate.
Craig, what does luggage allowance, or I guess you can probably say baggage allowance as well. What's that?
That's the amount, which is usually the weight that you're permitted to take onto the aeroplane or check in with your luggage. So it's sometimes 20 kilos, sometimes 15 kilos. And if you go over that, if you exceed it, you have to pay more money, which is excess baggage. Okay, excess baggage. The more money you pay because your suitcase or your bags weigh too much.
I have a good story about that. This is a true story. I once had to take two flights to get from Belfast to Valencia. I can't remember what route, but there were two flights, both with the same company. Mm-hmm. I won't name the company, but they begin with R and they're based in Ireland, that company. But I better not name them for legal purposes. And I didn't check on or check in any baggage. That means I wasn't going to put any baggage in the hold of mm-hmm. the plane.
The hold, yeah.
I was just going to take it on as hand baggage or hand luggage. So,
or you say carry on, yeah, carry on luggage.
Carry on. So the limit was, I believe, 10 kilos. Mm-hmm. So I took my first flight. Of course, they weighed, pesar, to weigh, W-E-I-G-H. They weighed the bag in. Okay, yep. And it fitted in the requirements, blah, blah, blah. Because there was a limit even on the, at that time, I think it's changed since, on the hand.
On the size of.
Yeah, and also the weight. As well as the size, there was a limit on the weight of the hand luggage. I don't know if that's still the case, but it was then. And it was okay. I got on the flight, no problem. Mm-hmm. Got off at the airport, I can't remember where it was, in the middle, and changed. And then I had to check on again. Same company. Mm-hmm. So they said, oh, let's have a look at your case. I go, oh, you're over the weight. I said, it's impossible. They said, well, you are. Look, you're 0.1 kilos, like nothing, like the weight of, say, a handkerchief over. I said, but it's impossible because I was under in the previous flight. They said, well, that's nothing to do with us. And I said, but it is, because it was your company who weighed me. Here's the ticket. I've just come from another flight in your company and I was fine. He said, no, sir, you're going to have to pay excess baggage. He said, no, hold on, no way. So I took something out of my bag. I can't remember what it was. I think I had some food in my bag, some biscuits and something else. I took them out and said, weigh it again. And they weighed and it was underweight. And they said, now you're underweight. And I said, okay, that's the bag I'm taking.
Did they apologize?
No, not at all. And I said, that's the bag I'm taking. I took out a packet of biscuits or something like that and started to eat them. And I'm taking that bag. Then I was damned. That means no way was I going to pay like £25 over a packet of biscuits, you know?
Yeah, I've seen some horrible arguments at airports for people who are overweight with companies that sound like Brian Air and they have to pay excess baggage. It's a crime. But that's how they make money. They're very cheap flights, but they add on extra costs to make their money. That's how they do it.
So always look carefully at your baggage allowance when you're booking a ticket.
Definitely.
Craig, the most important part of the flight, I guess, is going up into the air and coming down. How can we express that in English?
Well, the plane takes off, the phrasal verb to take off. As we've said before, take off has several different meanings. Take off your coat, take off a person means to impersonate. But when the plane takes off, it leaves the ground. And the opposite is not a phrasal verb. The opposite is to land. So plane takes off, plane lands. What time does your plane take off? What time do you land?
And if we want to turn those verbs into nouns, what would they be?
The takeoff and the landing.
The landing, uh-huh. A lot of people, a lot of foreigners don't know that word.
Landing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The cabin crew will attend to you on your flight. The cabin crew, in other words, the steward or stewardess, steward if it's a man, stewardess if it's a woman, or the air hostess or the flight attendant. They're the people who make sure you're comfortable and bring you food and drinks, etc. The cabin crew.
And we said the plane takes off, the plane lands. Where does that happen? Well, on the pista de aterrizaje, the runway. So the plane takes off and lands on a runway. R-U-N-W-A-Y. One word, runway.
Now, to taxi. Taxi, T-A-X-I. Is an important word when you're talking about planes. We're not talking about taxis. We're not talking about cabs. We're not talking about cars. But the verb to taxi means that the plane is moving on the ground slowly to get into position before takeoff. That is called to taxi. So if I say the plane is taxiing before takeoff, that's means it's moving around slowly to get into the right position. It's a strange verb, isn't it? You wouldn't expect that.
It's more popular and more useful as a noun, perhaps, to take a taxi to work. Mm-hmm. But the verb, as Reza said, is to move the plane around on the ground. When the plane is in the air after it's taken off, it increases in altitude. Now, when it gets to its steady altitude and it's flying to its destination without changing altitude, we can say it's cruising, to cruise. You might know the verb cruise when we speak about boats and ships, but when a plane cruises, it maintains its speed and altitude. So you may hear in English on a plane, we're now cruising at 20,000 feet, for example. Also in your car, when you're driving, you may have a car with a cruise control. A cruise control maintains the same constant speed.
Craig, you've had a few red-eye flights, those early morning or late-night flights that make you feel bad at the end. Have you ever suffered jet lag as a result?
Oh, yes, many times, usually because it's the red-eye flights that are cheaper. So those are the ones I usually take. And when you arrive at your destination, if it's been a long-haul flight, that means long distance, then there's usually a time difference. There's a different time when you land to when you took off, and that causes jet lag. So you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning because your body thinks it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, for example.
So you can use the word lag on its own. It basically just means a time difference.
Mm-hmm.
So jet lag is what you suffer because of the time difference.
Yeah, you can have time lag, can't you?
Yeah. Baggage reclaim is where you'll have to go when you arrive to get your bags back again. Or you could also call it the baggage carousel. That's the actual machine which goes round and round and round. Baggage carousel.
And if you are unfortunate, unlucky, and your bag does not appear on the carousel, then it's probably in a different city or country. So you have to go to the lost luggage place to report that your luggage hasn't arrived. Another very important expression, lost luggage. Those were words we covered back in episode 108. Let's look at some new vocabulary that we haven't spoken about connected to holidays and travel. One that occurred to me, Reza, was the difference between American English and British English, because Americans don't usually say holiday, do they? They don't usually say go on holiday. What do they say?
No, holiday's British English and Americans say vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So Americans go on vacation.
Can you say that in your best American accent?
Yeah. I'm going on vacation. No, that was Australian.
That was Australian.
I went Australian. What happened to me? I've got the wrong continent. Oh, let me think.
Good day, mate.
Forget about kangaroos. Let me think about American things. Okay, grizzly bears. Okay. I'm going on vacation down south in the United States, down Louisiana. Going on vacation, y'all.
That was pretty good. Yep. I'm not going to compete with you. I'm not going to try that, but very good.
That was the southern United States. People don't speak like that in New York.
Now, you may have heard the word peak before when speaking about a mountain. The peak, P-E-A-K. The peak of a mountain is the top of a mountain, the summit. It's also used quite often to speak about tourism and travel, because if you travel in August, for example, Christmas, Easter time, it's usually expensive, isn't it? It's usually quite expensive to pay for the flight, to pay for the hotel, because everybody is traveling at that time. So they say it's peak travel time. However, in Valencia, we have the Fallas Festival, but it's only a festival in Valencia. So the prices are usually cheaper, aren't they, Reza? What would you say if you travel during Fallas? It's not peak travel time, is it?
It's cheaper. It's off-peak. Off-peak. So usually the prices are lower when it's off-peak.
And if it's peak travel time, it's crowded with people. There are people everywhere, crowded, especially when you go to the sights of a city. For example, in London, the popular sites are Houses of Parliament, Big Ben, Buckingham Palace, the London Eye. What are the sites in Paris, Reza?
Champs-Élysées, the Eiffel Tower, Notre Dame, that type of thing.
So if you go to see those sites, we say you're going sightseeing. Sightseeing. Have you been sightseeing in Paris?
I've never stayed in Paris. Can you believe it?
I think it's time you did.
It's time I went, isn't it? I fancy a romantic weekend in Paris one of these days.
You should go. There's lots of things to see.
I'll have to go. What if you want to see things which are not buildings or monuments, but things you might find more in the countryside? How might you describe that, Craig?
Yeah, sometimes my students have a problem finding this word because they think about vistas and things. It's the scenery, probably. You'd say you're going to the country to see the scenery, or maybe the landscape, landscape. So you see the scenery or you see the landscape in the countryside.
Another thing you could do is to go on a tour, which means that you go to different places. You go, let's say you're on a tour in France, so you might stay in Paris for a day or two, then Brittany for a day, then Toulouse for a couple of days, then over to the east and then back to Paris. So you're traveling around on tour. Or you could even go on a package tour, which means that you pay for everything in advance and it's all timetabled. And as a group, you travel around the different places and it's mostly paid for in advance. You bought a package. So it was a package tour. You bought everything. And if you go to places which are difficult for foreigners to find, you might need a tour guide, a person who brings you to all the different places. For example, if you go trekking through Nepal, you probably need a tour guide to show you around.
Yeah. Have you been on any package tours recently?
Never in my life, in fact. I've never been on one. I've been on plenty of excursions, though. What's an excursion, Craig?
An excursion is a day trip, isn't it? It's when you go out for a day to see a particular attraction or a particular tourist site, when you go sightseeing in an area. So go on an excursion. Reza, where's the best place, in your opinion, for our listeners to find a teacher online on the internet?
Well, iTalki is a great place to find a teacher if it's convenience and affordability that you're looking for, and good value for money, because you get one-to-one teaching online anytime you like. You choose the time. You choose the teacher. You can look at different profiles. You can even choose how much you pay, because different teachers charge different prices according to their experience, qualifications, etc. All you need is a computer with Skype, and you can get started with your one-to-one lessons. And what's more, if you sign up through inglespodcast.com/italki, italki will give you $10, more or less, in italki credits to get started. And that should pay for your first lesson. So you can give it a go. We're sure you'll like it. Craig and I would like to thank italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
So we wanted to speak a little about Paco's idea of going on holiday this summer, but let's look first at some places where you could stay. So what kind of places are there for accommodation options when you go on holiday, Reza?
Well, of course, everybody's heard of hotels. Be careful of the pronunciation. It's hotel. Don't go all hotel. There's no hotel. It's a smooth hotel.
And some Spanish speakers put the stress on the first syllable, don't they? Hotel.
Ah, yes.
It's hotel. The
dar. Hotel.
Strong on the second syllable. Hotel.
To do that, you might have to make a reservation or to make a booking, you could say. And you probably have two or three options. You could book full board. That means you get all your meals there as well as accommodation. Or half board, which usually means that you get breakfast and one other meal, either lunch or dinner. Mm-hmm. Craig, of course, there are even different types of hotel.
Yeah, you can go for a 5-star luxury hotel. You could go down further down the list, a more inexpensive option, to a 3- or 2-star budget hotel, a low-cost hotel. And also you can find boutique hotels that are usually quite small, aren't they? Just a few rooms, very tastefully decorated, and usually quite expensive, a boutique hotel.
Hotels, as well as other types of accommodation, offer B&B. What's that?
Bed and breakfast. So you pay for your bed and you get a breakfast included. Most places in Europe have continental breakfasts or a buffet breakfast. If you go to the UK and Ireland, you very often get a cooked breakfast, which is a really big fried meal, usually not very healthy, but very, very tasty and very, very filling. So you don't really need lunch if you have a late cooked breakfast, which usually includes sausages, bacon, eggs, toast, tea, lots of food. Then you could probably wait until dinner before you eat again.
There probably aren't many people under the age of about 60 these days who haven't heard of Airbnb. That's the place where individuals rent out their houses or rooms for B&B. Bed and breakfast. That's why the website is called Airbnb. Have you ever used it, Craig?
I have used it a couple of times and I've been very, very happy with it. You can find places that are within your budget. It's a bit like iTalki because you find the place that fits your budget. You pay what you can afford. And I've been very happy with the service and with the apartments and flats I've found. Have you used it?
I haven't, no, but I have friends who've been very happy with it. I've also heard of a service that my friends have used and they've enjoyed, which is Couchsurfing. Have you used them?
I haven't, but I have heard about it. I think that's a very good idea if you want to practice your English. And we've spoken about this before. I think you said it's not a good idea to just do it because you want to practice your English, because that could be annoying to the person who has the couch.
Yeah. Don't ever say that. I appreciate people's frankness, but it can be a bit naive, un poco inocente, to actually say it. Don't say to someone, oh, you speak English. Oh, great, I can practice my English. As soon as I hear that, it quite annoys me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, do practice your English with your hosts who speak English, but don't tell them you're going to practice your English, because you'll immediately probably deter them, you know, put them off from wanting to speak to you.
And if you do use these services like Airbnb and Couchsurfing, you'll probably be self-catering, which means you cook your own food, which saves you money. You go to the supermarket, buy your food cheaply, and then you cook your food in the flat or house or apartment, whatever you're renting. So self-catering, you cater for yourself.
And Craig, what's a guest house?
A guest house is a private house where they rent out their rooms for people who want to stay. So thinking about what is the difference between a guest house and a bed and breakfast?
It's the same.
It's the same, isn't it?
Only you said a bed and breakfast. Okay. When we say a bed and breakfast, we understand it's a guest house. But of course, hotels also offer bed and breakfast, mm-hmm. but they aren't a bed and breakfast.
Right.
So it's a bit confusing. A guest house is also known as a bed and breakfast because they usually only specialize in bed and breakfast, mm-hmm. because it's a house, it's a family. They're not a hotel, but they use their house as if it was a mini hotel. It's very, very common in Britain and Ireland, but it's not so common in Spain and other places.
Albergue juvenil is youth hostel. Quite difficult to say. Youth hostel. Youth hostel. Stress the first word.
Sorry.
Stress the first word, youth, youth hostel.
And spell hostel.
H-O-S-T-E-L, hostel.
Which is different to Spanish, because Spanish ends in A-L, typical spelling mistake.
A caravan is another way to have a holiday, a caravan or a motor home. The difference is the motor home is connected, the engine is connected to the place where you sleep, but a caravan is towed, the verb to tow, T-O-W, which means pulled by an engine. So the caravan is towed behind your car. So you put the caravan, you connect it to your car, and you pull it, you tow it. And a motorhome in American English is commonly called an RV, recreational vehicle, RV in American English.
Now, if I say the word camping, all Spanish speakers understand me, but they often get the use of the words wrong. Camping is the activity of sleeping in a tent. A tent is like a temporary little house that you can erect with pieces of material. And you do that in a campsite. That is the area where lots of people with tents go to go camping. And if you use a caravan, you go caravanning. So to go camping or to go caravanning. The place is not called camping. Un camping is a campsite.
And another point connected to that, to go caravanning, to go camping, as we've said in the sports episode of Inglés Podcast, if it's an ing, it's usually go. So if it ends in ing, like you go trekking, you go walking, you go hiking, you go skiing, you go snowboarding, then you go camping and you go caravanning. So remember that collocation of go with the gerund.
Greg, there are many types of holiday to choose from. What types of holiday can you think of which are very popular?
Well, because I live near the beach here in Valencia, we often see holiday makers at the beach. Holiday makers are people who are on holiday. So there are beach holidays where you go to the beach. There are snow holidays where you go skiing. And there are adventure holidays where you do things like trekking, safaris, that kind of thing, to go on an adventure holiday. Can you think of any more?
A very different type of holiday would be a city break. So a break is changing from your normal routine, going somewhere different. So a city break is obviously going to a city, usually not for a long time, because the word break, as Craig said, descanso. So it's usually a short holiday. It won't be more than a week, and it might just be a couple of days. You might go on a city break to go shopping or to go to the opera or to see a musical or something like that.
You could take a city break to Paris for a long weekend.
Oh, I'd love to.
What's a long weekend?
A long weekend is when you have Friday and Saturday as the weekend, plus Monday on one side or Thursday on the other side.
Or Friday.
Or Friday, Thursday, Friday. It's when you have the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and then you add a day on either side, Friday or Monday, or even more days. You could add Monday and Tuesday to make your holiday longer. Puente in Spanish. Craig mentioned cruise earlier. A ship goes on a cruise. That means it's kind of like a tour, but on a ship, stopping in different places.
Have you ever been on a cruise?
No, and it doesn't attract me either.
Me neither. Sir. Although I tell you one that does attract me, a cruise around the Arctic Circle, a cruise around Scandinavia and the fjords, but that's very expensive.
So we already mentioned a long weekend, and one of the things you might do on a city break, let's say a long weekend, is you might go sightseeing, which Craig mentioned earlier, or it could be for a dirty weekend.
What's a dirty weekend, Reza?
Now, a dirty weekend, it doesn't mean that you don't get washed. It's a slightly old-fashioned expression, but it's kind of funny, to mean to go for an amorous encounter.
To go to have sex somewhere.
Yep, for example. So to do the sort of things that couples who are very passionate to do.
Or even, as I think back many, many years, couples who were living at home with their parents and wanted to escape with their boyfriend or girlfriend for a dirty weekend for a couple of days.
To do things that they couldn't do when their parents were listening.
Or in the car. And moving on to backpacking. What's backpacking? Is that where you put something on your back?
Basically, yeah. You put the backpack on your back. The backpack is the mochila. So if you're a backpacker, mochilero, you are going backpacking, you're traveling around different places, usually staying in budget, cheap accommodation, and everything you need fits in your backpack, so you don't take much baggage with you.
But backpack is mochila, but you could also say rucksack for mochila. R-U-C-K-S-A-C-K, rucksack. However, you would not say rucksacking, because the type of holiday where you go with something on your back very, very informally is backpacking. So a backpacking. I went backpacking through France, you could say.
Obviously, backpacking is cheap, and if you want to save even more money, make it even cheaper, you could go hitchhiking. You could hitchhike. That means that you don't pay for transport. You thumb a lift. You put out your thumb, stick your thumb out the side of the road, and hope that some kind person stops and gives you a lift, and you don't have to pay any money.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for this week. We are going to speak more about vacations, holidays, going abroad, going away for breaks very soon before the summer. But until then, we have to leave you. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, if you are going on holiday this year, tell us. Send us an email or a voice message. Tell us where you're going, what kind of holiday you're going on, or tell us about your best or worst holiday. We would love to hear from you. Voice messages, please, as usual, on SpeakPipe at speakpipe.com/Inglés podcast. Or send us an email with a comment to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to me at belfastreza@gmail.com.
And remember, all notes and links in Lathis to this episode can be found at inglespodcast.com/156. Before we go, we'd like to say thank you very much to Arminda from Madrid for continuing to transcribe full transcriptions for us. And we have full transcriptions for episodes 131, 134, 135, 136, 137, 138, 139 and 140. Thank you so much for all your hard work, Arminda. And we have another person who has volunteered to transcribe for us, Alberto Gómez from Granada, who has already kindly transcribed episode 132, which was quite a difficult episode on linking sounds. So well done, Alberto, who has done that for all of you to go and check the words that Reza and I say. And you can find Alberto's transcription at inglespodcast.com/132. Thanks a lot to both of you. If you would like to join our Patreon program so that we can get all of our past episodes transcribed, you're welcome to go to patreon.com/Inglés podcast and join our wonderful sponsors who are contributing to the show. And we have a star sponsor who we've mentioned before, Nikolay Dimitrov. Thank you very much, Nikolay, for your very generous donation. We have Anna Cherta, Pedro Martinez, Maite Palacín Pérez, Lara Arlem, Maria Gervati, Sara Jarabo, Carlos Garrido, Sara Heath Picasso, Mamin, Juan Leiva Galera, Corey Finneran, Mariel Reidemann, Jorge Jimenez, Raul López, Rafael, Manuel Tarazona, and two new sponsors. Thank you so much for joining our group. Agus Paolucci, I hope I pronounced your name correctly, Manuel Velazquez, thank you very much for joining our Patreon program. Reza, what are we going to speak about next week?
On next week's episode, Marcelo's true English story and adjective prefixes.
Until then, thanks for listening. It's goodbye from Reza.
And goodbye from Craig.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.